The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming to you live from the cozy confines of our, I guess we could call it our cave in the attic now. We've covered the window. I used to have this beautiful view out overlooking the front driveway here at Edstone, but apparently the flies really enjoyed the view as well. We kept attracting them somehow or another. They came in here, I guess, because of the light, and anyway, that was proven to be somewhat of a distraction. So now it's boarded up, and now it feels like, although it's bigger, obviously, than the cellar, it does feel somewhat like the cellar yet again. In any event, that won't affect the message, not one bit, as we've got lots to get to on today's program. Last Thursday, if you remember some of the technical difficulties we had, we didn't have time to get into a section on music, How God Values Music. That's a new booklet, or at least one that's been out for a few months now. And we'd like to discuss that, some of the content in that booklet, and also just some other things that I've talked about over the years in one of our freshman classes here at God's College. And speaking of that program from last week, we posted that at the website. We were hoping to run that on YouTube, of course. But speaking of the website, if you haven't noticed it, I can't remember if I brought this up last week or not, but there's a new page for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you click on the radio show box over at the right side of the front page of the website, you'll see the nice, attractive page that follows with the new radio program that's posted each day. Also, a little section for our book club, which some of you have asked about where to get to that content. It's easier to get to now, and then it's got the latest video that I've produced and other things there. They've also really dressed up a new page, or a nice page, for my father as well. So there's two new pages within the Trumpet website that I think just makes it more enjoyable to surf around. So you can enjoy that if you get to look to the radio page later on today. Well, the fallout continues from the Mueller report, with so many in the major media taking a massive hit, and also many Democrats as well. And we'll come to that in a moment. But just speaking of the Democrats, first, there was this piece at the Spectator. Well, before I even get into that, we just posted this article that we worked up from some of the material on this program a few weeks back, why emotion has replaced reason in America. That's going into the latest print edition of the Trumpet magazine, April 2019, the print edition. And that article is just now posted. It's featured at the Trumpet.com website. It's that one where, if you remember, we talked about, I think it was a Neil Ferguson column where he talked about how that we live in an era of emocracy, where emotion rules supreme. And he brought up just some of the prominent young Democrats that are taking over the party, and just how extreme their views are and how little regard they have for truth. He mentioned Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in this interview with Anderson Cooper, where she said, well, you know, we really can't get caught up in the truth. What matters is that we're morally right. We have to be morally right. And if we get some of the facts wrong, no big deal. It doesn't matter if we make stuff up. What matters is that we're morally right. That'll be, as I say, in the April edition of the Trumpet magazine. This other article here from Spectator, it talks about the cast of characters in the Democrat Party lining up to run for president, and how each of them, they're revolutionaries. They're revolutionaries. It says their hero, President Obama, he wanted to change America. But these people, Bernie, Beto, Kamala, Kirsten, and the rest, they don't want to just tinker with how America works. They want to fundamentally change the way America governs itself. They want to change the way we govern ourselves. They want to change the Constitution. They want to do away with things like the Electoral College. And they want to make sure that presidents can be chosen by the, well, just the basis of the popular vote. And as this author brings out at The Spectator, you can go back and look at the founding documents. You can look at the Federalist Papers, and you can see very clearly in there why the founders set it up the way that they did. But that doesn't matter to these revolutionaries. They just want a simple majority, and if they can get that and get to power again, then everything is solved. Well, they're, as I said, some of them, though, are taking some pretty significant hits now with the Mueller report. They also had this vote yesterday for the Green New Deal, where the Senate voted 57-0 against it, and the 43 Democrats that were there to vote just voted present instead of voting for it, because they know that this is going to be a talking point for Republicans in a little more than a year. Look at these extreme radical leftists in the Democrat Party. They're voting for something as ridiculous as the Green New Deal. She comes out with this this new deal, Ocasio-Cortez, that is, a few weeks ago. And so Republicans are saying, all right, if you guys are serious about this, let's put it to vote. Let's get your vote on record and see what the American people think about that. The New York Post had so much going on in the news, and so much of it is just crazy. This story yesterday about Jussie Smollett, how that he's on his way to court, and right away the prosecutor drops all the charges. And so he walks out free. And, of course, the police, even Rahm Emanuel, of all people, furious at what took place here. This hoax that went on for weeks, and that the media, once again, were reminded of this every few weeks, it seems. Jussie Smollett, of course, the Mueller, the hoax, the Russian collusion hoax, those boys from that Catholic school, Kavanaugh. These things seem like they happened so long ago. They're happening almost every 3-4 weeks. And the media just jumps on the bandwagon. They want so much for Jussie Smollett's charges. They want so much for his hoax, for his fake story. They want it to be true. It's just like I say in the Trumpet article. It's emotion. It's all about emotion. There's no reason. There's no appreciation or defense of the truth. Truth doesn't matter. The New York Post says, it brings me zero joy and maximum anger to have seen this one coming. A month ago, I predicted that Jussie Smollett, the apparent fabulist who upended the legal system by gleefully crying, MAGA! I said that he would skate, and sure enough, that's what happened yesterday. It says, in a deal so secretive, it stunned and angered Chicago's mayor and police chief and anyone else who cares about truth and justice. Prosecutors on Tuesday dropped all charges against the gay Black Empire actor, who told anyone who would listen that he was the helpless target of two racist, homophobic, Trump-loving goons. It says the attack likely was cooked up in Smollett's demented mind. That the attack likely was cooked up in Smollett's demented mind matters not a whit to the man and his minions. He came away from that yesterday saying, look, what I said happened. And now he's got this feather in his cap. A prosecutor working in cahoots with the Obama people, letting him off the hook. And so he's reverting back to his original story, the hoax. It's all true. I was attacked by the MAGA hat wearing goons. It says here, what's important is that Smollett laid claim to feeling marginalized, victimized, brutalized, agonized in the age of Trump. See, it's the age of emotion, democracy, not reason. Here is all that matters. He's a victim. He was brutalized. It's agonizing for him, as a black man, a minority, and a homosexual, to live in the age of Trump. That such a cynical plot could have been cooked up, as has been alleged, for Smollett to get a pay raise seems the height of audacity. The damage, he goes on to say, is enormous. In an instant, Smollett transformed from a dirty liar into a teller of uncomfortable truths, and from a villain into a kind of progressive darling, a man to be excused, hugged, and honored. So, another case, another high-profile case of injustice. Michael Avenatti, he's in a lot of trouble right now from prosecutors, federal prosecutors in California and New York, accused of, well, I don't want to get into all the details, but if guilty on even a handful of these charges, he could be spending the rest of his life in prison. And he was the one the media was holding up just not that long ago, just a few months ago, as potentially one who could take down Donald Trump. Listen to this montage, the love that they had for Michael Avenatti. This is Grabian put this together, and it goes back over the last year, year and a half. You remember, some of you, just how outspoken he was on all things Donald Trump. And the media absolutely loved it. Clip two.
Stormy Daniels lawyer Michael Avenatti is laying down the law. And is he really thinking about running for president?
Joining me now live, the man himself, Michael Avenatti.
Let's talk to somebody who understands the system very well. Michael Avenatti.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Michael, thanks so much for being here. Did you talk to Stormy Daniels last night? What was her reaction?
Did the president just get a new challenger for 2020? Stormy Daniels lawyer Michael Avenatti may have just tossed his hat into the ring.
Looking ahead to 2020, one reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
First, let me take a moment to brag on my former student. This dude right here, I think of him as in a Justice League with Robert Mueller to save our democracy.
A 9-year-old boy has been reunited with his mother in Guatemala. And the person who helped make this happen, Stormy Daniels' lawyer and potential presidential candidate, Michael Avenatti.
What do you say to critics who say this is a publicity stunt?
Doing good work, having kids reunited with their parents. I mean, my record speaks for itself.
Probably one of the biggest stars we have at this dinner tonight. Of course, this is Michael Avenatti.
And the only person right here Donald Trump fears more than Robert Mueller.
Mueller.
Please welcome Michael Avenatti. Yeah, I do think that that Trump is afraid of you.
Lawyers don't normally do talk shows.
I'm not your normal lawyer.
Yes, you are something of a folk hero now. Let's be honest, the whole reason that we're in love with you and Stormy is because we think you guys are the tip of the spear that's going to take down Donald Trump.
Take down Donald Trump. That's what it always comes back to, as we've been discussing on the last two shows. Take down. They want it so bad. Anyone who wanted to scratch beneath the surface and actually do a little bit of research, anybody who wanted to search for the truth, could have discovered months ago that this man was a fraud. And now look. Look at how foolish these commentators look. What a week this has been for the major media. The mainstream media. All of this happening in the same week. You're not going to hear much at all from CNN or some of the other outlets. You might remember some of the stories about Avenatti appearing on CNN something like 100 times in the course of a month. Just crazy. He's to be taken seriously as a presidential candidate. He's going to take down Donald Trump. What a week it's been for the media when you put that together with, as I say, the ongoing fallout from the release of the Mueller report. Listen to Sean Davis. He writes for The Federalist. He was on Fox News last night. Clip one.
I think this is probably the biggest, most consequential screw-up of the last 25 to 50 years. It is difficult to really comprehend or overstate the damage that the media did to the country, to their own reputation, to the Constitution. This was an absolute catastrophe.
An absolute catastrophe for the media, the major media, and for those coming out trying to defend their reporting, even award their reporting, as I covered yesterday. What a disgrace. Instead of saying, yes, there was the exchange between Eric Swalwell with one of the Fox commentators. And she said to him, a few months back, you said Donald Trump was a Russian agent. Do you stand by that remark? And he does, sure enough. Now, he tried to change the definition of what an agent is. But he can't even come out and say, after what was released Friday night and then again on Sunday afternoon, with Attorney General Barr's summary, he can't even back away and said, well, you know, I probably shouldn't have called him a Russian agent. But he does sympathize with Vladimir Putin. He has some policies that Putin must like. That's one thing. But he can't even back away from saying he's a Russian agent. Why has emotion replaced reason in America? This has been an absolute catastrophe. Not only for media, but for the Obama officials as well, as I discussed with you on yesterday's program. Again, you can get to these older shows. They're posted a few hours after the live stream every day, 5 days a week. But it's not looking so good for Obama-era officials heading up the DOJ, the CIA, the FBI. Breitbart interviewed Rand Paul, he's a senator, saying that in a luncheon yesterday, President Trump indicated that he was all for investigating the people who concocted this hoax. He wants to go after the Obama officials who caused so much damage. It's difficult to overstate the damage that's been done. 2 years, more than that even. Breitbart says when asked specifically if former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and former CIA Director John Brennan and former National Security Advisor Susan Rice should be called to testify about their role in the matter and be subpoenaed to force their testimony if they refuse to voluntarily comply, Paul said, absolutely. And then he goes on to talk about how Brennan and Clapper, they've lied before in front of the Senate. We have John Brennan who lied to us, Paul said, who spied on the Senate and tapped into Senate computers. This is what was going on the last few years of the Obama administration. And it's like my father said in Great Again, and then again in America Under Attack, or rather Saving America, the one from a year ago. America Under Attack was a little older. But what if? What would have happened if Hillary Clinton would have won in 2016? Think of everything that would have remained under the cover of darkness. As it is, like is written at the Hill, Mueller, that report, it's exposed. And he's no fan of Donald Trump, and certainly Andrew Weissman and Jeannie Ray and some of these other prosecutors that were working with him. These were left-wing prosecutors that had it in for Donald Trump. And as several have written, even in the last couple of days, they should have concluded long before last Friday that there was no collusion. They should have concluded that a few months into the investigation. There were people in the middle of 2017, even deep within the deep state, who knew there was no collusion. They were texting messages. There's no there. And so here comes Bob Mueller with his team of left-wing prosecutors, and this just goes on for 2 years. It goes right through the midterms from last year. You want to talk about influencing elections? What about the fact that the constant drumbeat coming from the left, collusion, Russian agent, did that have any impact on some of these districts that maybe were split between Republicans and Democrats? At The Hill, this is an opinion piece. It says, if anyone looks like an unwitting agent of Russia now, it's Andy McCabe and his fired boss, James Comey. Comey and McCabe came into possession of a dossier that was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and produced by a former British intelligence operative who reached into the ugliness of the Russian intelligence apparatus and asked for dirt on Donald Trump. Who's colluding with the Russians? Who actually is colluding with the Russians? It's right there in front of our faces. And it's been there. If you have eyes to see, it's been there these past 2 years. The whole case was set up and established on the fake Russian dossier. The whole case was built on that. The FISA warrant applications, all of it. The hook, those meetings, January 5th, January 6th, 2017. We covered that on yesterday's show. It was all based on the hoax laid out in the first line of the dossier. He's been a Russian agent for 5 years now, or at the very least, he's compromised. The Russians have dirt on him. And so they pushed it out there. And the media, they were happy to oblige. They were happy to take the message and run with it. Sure, we'll be your mouthpiece. It says here, never known to pass up such a juicy opportunity to stir up trouble. The Russians happily obliged. Here Hillary's people came to Russian intelligence to ask for dirt on Donald Trump, and the Russians were happy to oblige. Well, if it does anything to destabilize the election process, we're all for that. They've been for that for decades. It says the dossier was blinking Russian active measures in bright neon lights, but an FBI director and deputy director chose to ignore the obvious and instead use this Russian farce to open an investigation into a presidential candidate and his campaign. It was a staggering abuse of the FBI's legitimate authorities, a staggering abuse of power. We hear so much about obstruction of justice. Well, I don't know. They let Donald Trump off the hook with collusion, with conspiracy. But what about obstruction of justice? Well, what about just gross injustice? What about an abuse of power at the Department of Justice? That's what we're talking about here. And so there ought to be a lot of voices coming forward saying, look, we need to investigate the investigators. Of course we do. It was there flashing in bright neon lights. This is from Russia. This is Russia trying to destabilize the American electoral process. And yet Comey and McCabe, they take it and run with it. Same with Brennan and Clapper. They're leaking, they're pushing, they're calling their friends in the media. And then after the January 6, 2017 meeting, they're all emailing each other. CNN's about to break it. This is going to be awesome. There's a flood coming. This was going on at your FBI. This was going on at the Department of Justice. It says at The Hill, such a move never would have been considered by experienced FBI counterintelligence agents operating in field offices. They would have immediately recognized the dossier for what it is. But Comey's and McCabe's investigation was kept from real investigators and instead run out of the director's office. This was totally going against protocol. This was Director Comey running the investigation. Not saying, hey, we got this information, let's hand it off to these field agents and let them do their job. This was Jim Comey, the director of the FBI,
taking on the investigation with just himself, basically, with Andy McCabe, with a few at the DOJ, of course, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page. This was their team. It was the same team that was investigating Hillary. Let her off the hook. That's all according to plan. And then go after Donald Trump. This happened just 2 years ago in the United States. It says Comey managed to convulse the country by breaking one of the FBI's most sacrosanct rules. Investigations are kept secret to protect the accused in the event the investigation comes up empty. Yes, even when the accused is a president. See, they've already violated that with Hillary, even with Comey's unorthodox media campaign. Or rather, the press conference that he had in July of 2016. He comes out and says, no serious investigator would pursue this. Then now you hear all the calls for everything in the Mueller report needs to be publicized. Well, what about people's reputations? What about if there's things in there that were investigated but that never were crimes? And now people are so excited for everything to be out there in the open. That's just the way it is in this age of, not the age of reason. It's the age of emotion. We demand to see it. We've got to see the report. It says, finally, Comey leaked, perhaps illegally, FBI records to the press to ensure, in his own words, that a special counsel would be created to continue the counterintelligence investigation of the Trump campaign. He says a special counsel indeed was appointed, and $30 million of the people's money has been spent examining foolishness emanating from a Russian intelligence operation, while politicians and cable TV pundits have roiled the country, driving wedges amongst us. Listen carefully, The Hill says, and you can hear the laughter from the Kremlin. James Comey is their favorite American. It's not Donald Trump. The Kremlin's favorite American is Jim Comey. The Kremlin's favorite Americans, they are Jim Comey, John Brennan. He voted for the Communist Party in the 1970s. Nothing to look into there, nothing to investigate there. These are the Kremlin's favorites, James Clapper. And of course, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama as well. The Hill says, abuse of justice may be worse than obstruction of justice. If we are to have faith that our system of justice does not overlook the powerful who misuse their positions and enrich themselves with books describing what they did, then yes, the actions of James Comey should be criminally investigated and not simply subjected to an administrative inspector general report. Well, as I said yesterday, it remains to be seen what will happen if those who created the hoax, if those who lied and slandered the current U.S. president are held to account. We will see. My father wrote in Saving America, before the election, just about everyone believed Hillary Clinton would be the next president. If she had won, none of this corruption would have come to light. If she had won, we would see none of this. None of this would have been brought to light. My father says we're getting a hard look. And indeed it is. It's a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power. And to stay in power. They have no respect for law. They're lawless. And there's no, like I said yesterday, there's no humility. There's no repentance. There's no change. Victor Davis Hanson had a piece just yesterday that he wrote talking about how Donald Trump got in the way of the progressives' 16-year Obama-Clinton project. They had it in the bag. 8 years of Obama, 8 more years of Hillary Clinton. And then Donald Trump got in the way of that. And that's why you see the mass hysteria. That's why you see the mass derangement. Hansen says Obama administration bureaucrats, Loretta Lynch, Bruce Orr, Rod Rosenstein, FBI grandees such as James Baker, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, intelligence kingpins such as John Brennan and James Clapper, and national security officials turned intelligence sleuths such as Susan Rice and Samantha Power. These were the two unmasking all of these Americans. They would all have been competing on the basis of service beyond the call of duty for top jobs in the Clinton administration had Hillary Clinton won. These would be the people in the top jobs of the United States government. Victor Davis Hanson said, translated, that means the hysteria that helped prompt the Mueller investigation was in part whipped up by those who had knowingly acted unethically or illegally during and also after the 2016 campaign. These Obama officials, they bet on the sure thing, but wrong horse. And suddenly, after November 8th, 2016, feared that they were soon to be the subject of lots of criminal exposure. And so, like I was saying on Monday's program, in large part, that's what the Mueller investigation was intended to cover up. It wasn't just going after Donald Trump. It was to cover up the sins of these Obama officials. Why would it take 2 years to discover that there was no collusion? Why, among all of the other leaks, hundreds and hundreds of leaks, was there never a leak saying that, well, as I understand it, someone on the Mueller team says there's actually no collusion? Why didn't we hear that at the end of 2017? Why didn't we hear that last summer? Why didn't we hear that before the 2018 midterm elections? Well, it had to go on for a long time to provide cover. It couldn't go on forever. But as you heard on Monday's program, look at the size and the scope of this investigation. $30 million, $40 million, 19 prosecutors, 40 FBI agents, hundreds of subpoenas, hundreds of witnesses, more than a dozen foreign governments got involved. And now the media, Democrats, they've got egg on their face for sure. But it remains to be seen if those that were given this cloud of cover, covered in darkness, all those names there at the start of Hansen's article. It says here, well, I don't know if I know where the quote is. I should have highlighted it. Robert Mueller spent over $30 million and 674 days in vain ferreting out collusion, not because it was necessarily difficult to prove such a charge either true or false. After all, the basis for the allegation, the veracity of the Steele dossier, could have been easily and quickly adjudicated. There were people in the deep state, that, like Bruce Orr, that knew that dossier was garbage from the beginning. They knew it was a garbage document. Members in the left-wing media, they knew it was a garbage document. But it took the Mueller team almost 2 years to finally get to the bottom of this. And now we'll see if those investigators, now we'll see if those Obama-era officials are held to account. My father said in that Saving America article, the entire Trump-Russia investigation is based on a hoax. It's based on a hoax. Mueller's team has been searching for evidence of collusion for nearly a year. This was written a year ago, and he's found nothing. But what has been revealed is a tremendous amount of lawbreaking by bureaucrats in intelligence and law enforcement. That certainly has proven to be true. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll reserve the last minutes of this program for the subject of music, specifically How God Values Music, a new booklet produced by the Philadelphia Church of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
In this age of immocracy, to use the term that Neil Ferguson coined, this age of emotion, this age of mass derangement, it is important, critically important, that we fill our minds with the things of God, or set our minds on the things above, like it says in Colossians 3. Music is such a powerful medium, a powerful medium. You think about King David, or David, who would later become king, and the soothing music that he provided for King Saul, who was suffering from some mental derangement of his own in his day. And godly music really comforted him. It changed his mindset. And we need that from time to time. Really, we need it on a daily basis, as I was saying in my class this morning. You think about the headlines that we're seeing every day, the news cycle. Of course, we have to examine some of that to watch and pray. But we've got to watch unto prayer, as Peter said, and make sure that we see things and that we're examining the news from God's perspective. We need to bring God's thinking. We need to bring God's mind into our daily lives. Every day, I've got a series on that subject coming up. I've been going through it at the annual campout, the Robbers Cave campout, and then our forums in the college setting since the campout. And I want to break that down into a 1 or 2 week series for the back end of these programs. God's mindset, God's thinking. Well, as I say, godly music is a wonderful way to fill up on the things of God. Again, Ephesians 2:2 says that Satan is the prince of the power of the air, and he communicates through music. There was a study a few weeks back that talked about just all of the violent and sexual themes that are obviously ubiquitous in the world of hip-hop music or rap music, whatever you want to call it. But this study pointed out that even the popular songs, not hip-hop, but just the top 40 songs that people listen to on the radio, that they have just as much in the way of sexual themes, violent lyrics, that sort of thing. And so it's everywhere. Like I say, it's in the hip-hop community. It's in popular music. Satan is communicating his message. And when you're listening to it, like so many Americans are, for 20 and 30 hours per week, how does that impact our thinking? Even with respect to what I covered in the first segment, the things that we're filling our minds with, and then the truth comes and stands right in front of our faces, and we say, no, that's not the truth. I don't care what it says. I believe this. It's important that we're right morally, never mind the facts. Well, Herbert Armstrong was way ahead of his time, way ahead of his time. Back in 1981, this is from The Missing Dimension in Sex, he said, what many do not realize is that this teenage influence on the whole society is predominantly sexual influence. Well, he's talking here about the influences of the teens and how that they, I kind of picked it up in the middle of the thought, but they're the ones driving the themes that you see on TV and that you hear on the radio. And it's predominantly a sexual influence and also is predominantly violence. Sex along with violence and crime, Mr. Armstrong said. In Principles of Living, our freshman class here at the college, we go through this chapter in Alan Bloom's book, the late Alan Bloom, Closing of the American Mind, his classic from the late 1980s. This is the 1980s, mind you. This is 35, 40 years ago. Alan Bloom talking about the impact of music on your ordinary college student. He said, but rock music has one appeal only, a barbaric appeal to sexual desire. Not love, not eros, but sexual desire undeveloped and untutored. It acknowledges the first emanations of children's emerging sensuality and addresses them seriously, eliciting them and legitimating them, not as little sprouts that must be carefully tendered in order to grow into gorgeous flowers, but as the real thing. It says rock gives children. This is rock music or traditional music, traditional in the popular culture sense, certainly in the hip-hop culture as well. It gives children on a silver platter with all the public authority of the entertainment industry everything their parents always used to tell them they had to wait for until they grew up and would understand later. Not so. Not so. Music now, popular culture, that's replaced the parents' role in many ways. That's the sex ed teacher. So they're getting all of this gutter knowledge about sex, about society, about life. And none of it's grounded in Scripture. None of it. None of it emanates from God's mind. Bloom says the result is nothing less than parents' loss of control over their children's moral education at a time when no one else is seriously concerned with it. No wonder. No wonder we consume lies on a daily basis. No wonder we reject facts in the name of being morally right. It gets back to education. It gets back to parental authority or lack thereof. Of course it does. It's the music industry, it's the media today who are out there developing, nurturing the morals, the standards of the younger generation. And just look at some of the lyrics, look at the themes. It's like Paul said in one of his letters, it's so deviant that you don't even speak of it. Alan Bloom says, ministering to and according with the arousing and cathartic music, the lyrics celebrate the puppy love. This is him writing in the 80s. What would he say today if he was still here? Celebrate the puppy love as well as the polymorphous attractions and fortify them against traditional ridicule and shame. The words implicitly and explicitly describe bodily acts that satisfy sexual desire and treat them as its only natural and routine, an only natural and routine culmination for children who do not yet have the slightest imagination of love, marriage, and family. They know nothing about that, but they know a lot about sex. They know a lot about violence. And what an impact. What an impact this has on our society. He was talking about things like the stereo and the headphones back in the 1980s, how that it made it possible to listen to this wavelength every day, hours and hours a day, hours on end. It takes quite a lot. in the way of good parenting to really steer our minds and to steer the minds of our children in the direction of God, in the direction of God's music. How God values music. One of the great things that Ryan Malone does in this booklet is he just goes through and shows example after scriptural example. He shows how that with this righteous leader, when the nation was obedient to God, look at how central music was to their overall worship of their Creator. Yes, God has a lot to say about music in His inspired word. He certainly does. My father gave a program in October, just a few months ago, where he advertised and promoted this new booklet, How God Values Music. And listen here to what he said in that October show, clip 5.
How much do you know about music? Great music benefits our mental, physical, and emotional health. It aids our thinking and helps us get rid of our moods, the wrong kinds of moods, so say many of the experts. Now, you can prove that to yourself, but on the contrary, there is a wrong kind of music that will have just about the reverse effect of that and can damage your mental and physical and emotional health. Something we need to be very careful about. Great music also can remove some depression. That depression can be caused by the contrary type of music, perverted music or anything like that. But we
That's my father from October 2018. It's a battle every day. It's a battle. We're going against the prince of the power of the air. And modern technology just makes it all the more possible for this medium to negatively impact the masses. We're seeing it happen daily on a mass scale, not just with music, but with so much false information, as I said in the first segment. But think of all of the talent and the ability that Lucifer had originally, before he became Satan the devil, before he rebelled against his creator and turned to darkness and every kind of perverted music. You can read in Ezekiel 28 how that he really did have, Lucifer did, a gift for godly music. But he turned to rebellion. He turned against his creator God. Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages, the results of that failure are also manifest today in much of our modern music. Great genius and skill in music was created in Lucifer. Now that he's become perverted in all his thinking, acting, and being, he's the real author of modern perverted music and the modern rock beat, it says. Think of of all the supreme talent, ability, and potential in a being created with such capacities, and all perverted. All of it perverted. Here's what my father said, and he's basically commenting on that passage in Ezekiel 28, which I didn't read, but it's the passage about his musical genius. And here's what my father said, clip 6.
God created this great archangel, Lucifer, and notice, He gave him all of this musical talent. He was in charge of music and other things. But the workmanship of the tabrets and the pipes that was prepared in you in the day that you were created, he had these superior musical skills. And God planned on him taking that and the angels taking that into the entire universe.
That was the plan. But of course, the angels failed in that plan, a third of them. And now, though, and I covered this just this morning in epistles, but now God wants human beings to be created in His image, His character, with our minds filled with godly music. And as it's something that plays out, something that's even greater than what Lucifer created. One last clip from my father's Key of David show, clip 7.
And he rebelled and became Satan the devil and the god of this world, and he has perverted the music of this world. Most of it is perverted. Certainly much of it. But there are certainly good musicians, great musicians in this world, and there's great music. And you'll see in this auditorium some of the best of the human spirit there is on this earth through music, singing, and dancing. That is something that benefits our students, benefits all of our people in every way.
There at that last bit, he's obviously referring to the concert series that goes on at Armstrong Auditorium, all the musicals that we've produced that Ryan Malone, the author of this booklet, has produced and composed. Beautiful, beautiful music. I just want to finish today's show with a selection from the David musical. This is called The Mighty Harp, and I think it's a, given what I said there at the start about David soothing Saul, who was suffering from mental derangement, in this mighty harp scene, and I wish you could see it too, but at least you can hear it here. It illustrates, I think, how godly music can help us get into the right mindset, because at the start of it, you hear all of these discordant themes like you would hear on popular radio today, popular radio stations today. All of this that was affecting Saul's mind, and then about halfway through the piece, you have David's harp music driving away those evil spirits. This is from David's Endless Throne, and the selection is called The Mighty Harp.